This is Congressman Lee Zeldin reminding you all to keep your radio to 103.9 LI News Radio for the biggest stories from across the island.
All right, huge lineup today as we lead off with Congressman Lee Zeldin, of course, with great news coming out the other day. The votes finally counted, and yes, he will enter term number four and head to Washington once again representing the first congressional. We say a very good morning, and by the way, an official congratulations as well, Congressman.
Hey, thanks so much, Jay. It's always good to be with you, and I'm sure we'll have a lot more to talk about in the months and years ahead.
No question. A little bit of relief, right? I mean, listen, you want to make it official and everything else. Not that there was any doubt. We spoke to you right after the election on the next day. But, you know, it's the process. It's the absentees. And, you know, listen, I've been saying this. They should maybe consider changing the system so that, you know, we make it uniform or we get these ballots counted on a timely basis. But I don't think there was really anything in doubt, depending on the lead that you had there on November the 3rd, you know?
Yeah, we knew on election night that we won the race. We saw it with the absentee ballots that were outstanding, and even those that were requested that hadn't been returned yet, looking at the party registration. And when campaigns are with the ability to go a little bit deeper in the way they operate their campaign, you can start modeling the data that you have, so you can start to get a feel for how are the Republicans who are voting absentee voting, how are the independents who are voting absentee voting. And because of the information that we had, we weren't just confident that we won on election night. We knew that we had won on election night. If I was a Democrat, the AP would have called the race on election night. I mean, if you remember just a couple districts over in New York 4, where Kathleen Rice, who's a Democrat, she was up by about 4 points, 4 to 5 points. I was up by about 23.5. Her race was quickly and enthusiastically called. Now, I'm not saying that to complain by any means. It's just interesting, you know, how that dynamic went. Fast forward to today, you and I having this conversation. Interestingly enough, While mathematically there's a 100% certainty that we won our race, you know, and if we lost every single remaining absentee ballot, it still wouldn't be enough to overcome us. There's only two federal races in the country that the Associated Press still hasn't called. One is upstate, New York 22. Claudia Tenney is up by 12 or 13 votes over Anthony Brandisi, which actually isn't the closest race in the country. I'll mention that in a sec. The only other race that the Associated Press hasn't called yet in the country is New York 1. I can't come up with any theory as to why they haven't done that yet. But to that other race that I mentioned, in the last day or two, in a congressional district in Iowa, state officials, I believe yesterday, certified the results. And the challenger in that race, the Republican challenger, won by 6 votes. So going as far as a message to anyone who's listening this morning and you're wondering whether or not, you know, or you've thought it in the past, does my vote count? A congressional district, you know, the first congressional district is about 725,000 or so people. In that congressional district in Iowa, 6 votes determine the winner. It's amazing.
Excellent point, no question about it. You're right. You know, for some reason, they couldn't declare Zeldin a winner, no question. You know what's interesting with the House? And again, if you're following the numbers, maybe in the business, we do that a little more closely than the average person. But you know, the House has picked up some seats here. You know, some Republicans have won some seats in the last week or so. I think the numbers. I might be wrong. Maybe off a seat or two, but 222-207. I said it yesterday, kind of a 15 seat differential there. That's you know, considering what it was, Congressman, you know, it's interesting to see how the House has picked up a few seats here for Republicans.
Well, yeah, and taking that even further, and you're right about the 222 number, what we have seen over the course of these last few weeks since Election Day was very different, the opposite of what we saw after the election day in 2018. After election day in 2018, all these different Republican House candidates all across the country with the lead on election night saw their leads disappear, and they went from winning to losing And it was actually quite remarkable, shocking what had happened at 2018 after the election. This year, everything has broke the Republican way. So on election night, you had these Republicans running for the House all across the country with the lead, and they held on. In some cases, as I just mentioned, with the two districts, one where the Republican won by six, the other one where the Republicans currently out by 12, it's quite close. But now you're in a situation where let's just say Claudia Tenney wins New York 22, and right now she's up by 12. Let's go off that. So you have 222, and you could be in a situation because you need 218 votes in order to be in charge of the chamber. There's 435 House districts, so 218 give you the majority. When all these races are all done, you might be looking at a 222 to 214 majority of Nancy Pelosi. Now, I'm not a fan of Nancy Pelosi, and I believe that the Democrats would be best served by replacing her as the Speaker of the House, and they may do so anyway. She won the vote behind the scenes a couple weeks back, which only required a majority of their conference. But when you get to the House floor at the beginning of January, she needs to get 218 votes on the House floor. Now, something to watch is that you have more than four. Now, that means she can only lose four people. Only four people could vote against her. You have far more than that of members who are publicly opposed to Nancy Pelosi. They have voted against her on the floor of the House of Representatives. In this vote, they're saying that the party needs new blood. This is their opportunity. I mean, by the way, Kathleen Rice is one of them. She's been very public about it. You know, I'm not calling her out. She's proud of that position. She's voted against her in the past. Some other names come to mind as well. So Nancy Pelosi can only lose four votes in order to stay as Speaker with that vote at the beginning of January. Despite the fact that I am not a fan of the Speaker of the House, I got to tell you what, if she figures out how to get to 218 under this situation, these circumstances, I'm going to be somewhat impressed at her abilities tactically and politically to be able to pull this off, because right now, I just don't see it. There may be a new Speaker of the House come the beginning of January if she can't get to 218. Well, there will be a new Speaker of the House beginning of January if she can't get to 218.
You cannot be. That's an interesting situation right there. You cannot be too happy with Nancy. I don't care what side of the fence you're on. The way she has conducted her business, the way she is going about with this stimulus stuff, it's deplorable. I'm sorry. You could be the staunchest of Democrats. You cannot be happy with her performance. You just can't. The way she has conducted herself over the last couple of months, it's unbelievable. So that's going to be an interesting number right there. No question.
Yeah, that's a really important point as it relates to the next coronavirus response bill, because these deals, these negotiations, a lot of it is about compromise. A lot of it is understanding where the votes are, where your leverage is. And it was just so total. Her compass on this, as it relates to leverage and predicting the future, has been so totally off. And there was a point where she was looking for about $2 trillion, and the Republicans were coming to the table at zero. This is where you are on basically the middle of July as they first sit down. And then the Republicans are essentially at a trillion. So that's where the negotiation is. Well, for a few weeks, you're looking at $1 trillion on the Republican side and $2 trillion on the Democratic side. You're still a trillion apart. I think you and I spoke during this time. It was primarily getting to the number on state and local government funding. But then the administration, as you're going through mid to late September, the administration offers 1.6 and then 1.8 and then $1.9 trillion. So here you are at one point in the negotiation, it's $2 trillion to zero. And now it's $2 trillion to $1.9 trillion. And not only are you unwilling to take yes for an answer, you're unwilling to cut the deal because you don't want the president to have the win, because what's most important is that you want the political victory of being able to take out the president of the United States. You knew that it would be good for our country if you cut the deal, so you don't. They don't stay at their ask. since the election, they have actually upped their ask, where now they're looking for over $3 trillion. So you can't, I mean, as far as negotiating against yourselves, the administration negotiated against itself all the way up to basically her number. And then she doesn't come by, you know, say, okay, you know, I'll take yes for an answer, let's cut the deal. The response after the election is, we want $3-something trillion, and people are hurt. There are folks in the middle who, you know, maybe they're an airline worker and they were furloughed. They're a restaurant now going through a second round of restrictions from their local government or from their state. I mean, there are individuals, families, people in need of food assistance as you're going through the holiday season, needs for additional testing, education, and all of that is totally held hostage because the speaker does not have her compass calibrated correctly with regards to her leverage and where the votes are and what the right moves are. And as a result, you end up with nothing. There are people who say, you know, they want to just blame the Republicans, or they want to just blame Mitch McConnell. You know, that's fair game if you're going through the months of May, June, and July, and the Republicans and Mitch McConnell are not even at the table. But that's a whole other story when you fast forward to the end of September, and the Republicans have gone basically all the way up to what you asked for, and you're still not taking yes for an answer.
Listen, her nose is up in the air regarding the American people. People, you know, people are hurting now more than ever. I feel the pain. I feel the pain. I really do, more than ever now. I really do. And, you know, the lines are longer on the food lines. The businesses are hanging on to dear life. You got all the COVID restrictions now. You know, they tighten the noose a little bit here. People are hurting. They can't hang on anymore. And I can't believe that she is being as staunch as she is in negotiations when she should be flexible. And especially, you know, with Joe Biden coming into play. And you would think she would actually, now that she has, at least in her own warped mind, said, you know what, we didn't get it done under when the president was vying for re-election. Now that it appears Joe Biden will be heading into the White House, now I think we can get something. She still doesn't have that mindset, which is hard to believe. It really is.
Yeah. And adding another dynamic to that is that the number of, when you got to $1.6 trillion, you lost Republican votes in Congress. Then you go up to $1.8 trillion, you lose more Republican votes. You go up to $1.9 trillion, you lose additional Republican votes. So keeping, as far as the vote counting piece of this, and let's just say every House Democrat votes for the deal. Let's just assume you have no issue in the House, but you have to get the votes in the Senate. You have a position right now where if Joe Biden is cutting a $2.2 trillion deal, let's say, with Nancy Pelosi, let's say Joe Biden and Nancy Pelosi do that between themselves, Joe Biden isn't delivering the Republican votes in the Senate to get it done, but Donald Trump can. So interestingly enough, you know, the right calculation, if you're Nancy Pelosi and if you care about getting the deal done, which means that you need Republican votes in the Senate, if you want to get the deal done, it's not to wait until Joe Biden gets there. It's to do it now while Donald Trump is there, because Donald Trump has an ability to deliver Republican votes that Joe Biden can't. So that's the raw, you know, X's and O's. If you know, this was if we were, you know, behind the scenes writing the playbook for Nancy Pelosi and writing out strategy, the right time, I mean, honestly, the right time to cut the deal would have been at the end of September or sometime in October. But if you're going to wait until after the election, then do it right after the election. But the idea right now, we're not going to cut the deal right now because we don't want to deal with Donald Trump. You just lost votes, and you're going to end up with even less. In the new year, likely, we'll end up with even less in the new year because Joe Biden can't deliver Republican votes in Congress like Donald Trump can.
Yeah, no doubt. There's no doubt about it. So, you know, I tell you, it's craziness right now. Listen, I know you're going to get to some morning stuff. I did have a couple of things I want you to type for time. You have to go, right? So I will get to you next time, I guess, on some stuff. I wanted to hit you on a few things here. You do have to go, though? You have to go.
Yeah, I am actually, I probably have about 90 seconds or so before they've got me going into the next thing, but if you got a question for me, I'll try to answer you quick.
And a lot of people have been hitting me up on this, and that's the censorship stuff. Deplorable, with his Jack Dorsey and Zuckerberg. You know, at what point do they finally get it, Congressman, regarding how to handle their companies? You know, when is the leash not going to be long enough to get away with more stuff? It's unbelievable. Big topic of conversation on this program.
Well, you know, one of the big motivators for companies like that is the money. And the biggest federal protection that they have with regards to the way that this has been legislated and regulated is that they have liability protections. And the way that they conducted themselves, especially in the, I mean, you've seen it since the election, too. We're seeing it right now as it relates to the Georgia Senate race. But what we saw leading up to Election Day is a decision made by some of these social media, some of these tech giants, to put their thumb on the scale. And because of that, they should be treated as companies that will put their thumb on the scale politically the way that they did. And if they want to tamper with their algorithms the way they do, and if they want to have the biases that they do, okay, well, let's treat them like tech companies that want to put their thumbs on the scale. They should not have the liability protections that they have, where, you know, they want to pick the winners and losers. They want to decide, you know, which Americans have the rights to be able to communicate freely without censorship on their platform, and which ones do. They want to decide what's true and what's not true, and do so extremely inconsistently, and basically do it determined by whether the content helps the right or the left, helps Republicans or Democrats. So let's just treat them exactly how they want to be treated, based off of how they're acting. So that's, as far as federal action goes, that's probably the best act that Congress could do today, the best action Congress can take today, beyond the oversight hearings, which, by the way, are important to bring them before Congress, answer questions, you learn more. They should be raked over the coals for some of what we've seen over the course of these last several weeks and months. But on top of that, as far as actually doing something about it, I would take away their Section 230 liability protections. Now, as far as us as consumers go, a lot of people who are complaining still have accounts on their platforms. I have a Twitter account. I have a Facebook account. I also have a Parler account and Instagram. I communicate all across social media platforms. But you know, the next big move, which could be happening, you know, it may not happen today. There are some people every day who will switch over from one platform to another. If you see a mass move imminent, which could happen sooner rather than later, if you see a mass move of platforms where people are going from, they're completely leaving, let's say, Twitter and going somewhere else, now you start having a duty on the part of those who lead these companies to readjust their focus a bit and ask themselves, why did we just lose 3.7 million accounts in the last 11 hours? What's going on here, and what do we do to fix it? And they say, well, maybe that was just a one-time deal. We're not going to do anything about it. Okay, well, fast forward a day later. I'm like, why did we just lose an additional 6.4 million accounts in the last day? There seems to be something going on here. So it's really all about what motivates them, what moves them more than anything else. And it comes down to the bottom line. It comes down to the money. So there is the best action that Congress can take, which I believe is removing the Section 230 liability protections. And then there's the best action that the individual American, the consumers, can take, And it's really not going to be about one person leaving the platform and going somewhere else. It's going to end up being, you know, massive amounts of Americans choosing to leave. And I honestly don't think that's happening today. But it could happen sooner rather than later. I think that would be a powerful message.
No question. At least it'll send something. Listen, thanks so much for your time. We know you're pressed, and the OT as well. We'll talk to you soon. And again, congratulations officially.
All right. Well, thanks so much, Jay. Great to be on with you. Talk to you soon.